The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. With our best ever Wi-Fi all around your home, your world is limitless.
It's 9:22. It's Wednesday morning. We're delighted to have your company today, and thank you for all the texts so far to 51551 and all emails, as always, welcome to ryan at rte.ie. Eimear O'Neill, good morning.
Good morning to you.
I was reading a little bit about you in, I think it was the Bray People, would that be right?
Yes.
In the last week or two, they've been covering your story, and you became, to me, a person of interest because you've got quite a story to tell. So I'm going to begin at the beginning, if you don't mind, and
Absolutely.
Ask you to where you were born and a little bit about yourself, because you kind of, America, sport, let's do all of that
yeah.
bit of chat. Would you tell me about that?
So I was born in 1985, and my mom is a Wexford woman from a small village, Ballindagan. If you blinked, you'd miss it. And she went over as a voluntary nurse to Nigeria to work, and that's where she met my dad. And she came back then in 1985 pregnant with me. You know, that was kind of, I suppose, a pretty big deal at that time. She was obviously facing the idea that she may be disowned by her family. You know, and I know it's a shocking thing to think of, but I mean, that's the reality of that era. Like,
And was she? Was she? How did?
At that time, both her parents had actually passed, and she did get some really good support from her sisters in Bray, and that's kind of why we ended up living in Bray rather than going back to Wexford, her hometown. Yeah. But it was not without the idea that she would give me up for adoption initially. So she did actually go to an agency to see about having me adopted before I was born. And they said, yeah, we'll gladly take her, but like, we have to be really honest with you, like, she won't get adopted. So she's going to be in a children's home, you know, until she ages out of the system. And I have some friends that have had that experience in those homes. And it's by the grace of God that, you know, she decided to keep me, because by all accounts, it would have probably been a horrific life for me.
I find it extraordinary that you can, that you know that.
I know.
Do you know what?
We have a very open dialogue, myself and my mum. And I mean, it's
amazing.
I mean, but you know, it's important to know these things. And for me, it gives me so much admiration for her, because, you know, I can understand where she was coming from. She wanted to make sure that I had a good life. She wasn't sure at that time she could. She was a single woman with a black child, no parents. And I understood that. Yeah. But I think ultimately she felt, at the end of the day, a parent's love is the be all and end all.
But I suppose what I'm kind of not shocked by, but I love her honesty as a mother to a daughter. And now, but also the fact that she was happy to admit that, or not happy, but she was willing to admit that she went as far as the door.
Yeah.
Because she had this massive life decision to make.
Correct.
And she took the gutsy, really kind and ultimately correct decision was, what am I doing here, probably? She must have had this existential crisis.
Yeah,
what a lonely road.
Exactly. But at the end of the day, she felt it was necessary to even contemplate that decision, you know. And it was, you know, obviously, yes, because she was a single parent, but the idea of being a white woman raising a black child in Ireland in 1985 was huge for her, you know, with no support system. And, you know, all of her thoughts of what the future might be like were quite accurate, to be fair. You know,
like what?
When she did have me, she would have been subjected to being called an N-word lover. When she'd walk down the town with me, people would stare under the breath.
I don't want names, but people actually say the word out loud to her?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I also still hear that word. I can soundly say I would at least hear the N-word in my company, maybe not directed to me, at least once a month.
We'll get there in a minute, because it's such a disgusting thought.
Yeah.
That I want to dwell a little bit about how you got on when your mum brought you home.
Yeah.
It must have been, imagine the day she brought you home and put you down, because I know what it's like to put a baby down in the home, and looked into the eyes and said, that was the right way to go. Imagine.
Feeling the love.
Anchored together.
You know, initially we didn't actually have anywhere to live. So we did stay with her sister for a long time. And we then got a council house. And the experience there was horrific. Again, we have a very open dialogue about my upbringing in life. So she is a nurse, and our house was constantly broken into. I'm assuming people thought there were maybe medical supplies in the house or that. But our house was also set fire to, and also a hose was put in the downstairs window, and the downstairs of the house was flooded. From all accounts from my mum, she really did live in fear, and it was a horrible space. And, she would recall even me at that age, so I would have been about three, just explaining to her or saying things like, my friends are being mean to me, kind of a thing, three, four. And I wouldn't understand why, but obviously they were saying words too that I didn't understand. And I suppose she was in a space that she thought, I need to do better for my daughter here. And she worked really, really hard and actually bought a house for us. And there, it really didn't stop. There was a crowd of kids that are a couple of years older than me, but they would follow me around when I was playing with my friends and call me the N-word and tell me that they were going to kill me or beat me up or whatever. It was
what age
different
were you at
every
that point,
other day. So I
seven, eight, nine?
Yeah, I would have been about seven. Yeah. Seven, eight, nine. It went on for years. And you know what? From that, it was such a horrible space because I was so embarrassed. And I know you're thinking, like, why is that the word you're using right now? But I was so ashamed of myself. I was so embarrassed to be black
and other,
being called
as they say.
Out for
yeah.
it. Yeah, and I felt so bad for my friends because you could feel after the ordeal that, they were uncomfortable. And I hated bringing that on them. It really did affect me socially as a child. And we ended up moving house, actually, again. And things were a lot better the third time around in our third home.
In Bray again?
Yeah.
So you stayed in Bray all the time. For your generation listening today, people born in the 80s will think, but how could this be happening in 1985, 6, 7, 8, 9, and kind of into the 90s? That's before we get to 2020, incidentally. Yeah. Because these sort of stories, you think, belong to Mississippi, Alabama, yeah. Let alone Ireland, small town, small times, small, narrow-minded Ireland of the 40s, 50s, 60s.
Yeah.
In other words, we haven't grown very much, as much as we'd like to think we have. But we'll keep going with your story, if that's okay, Emer.
Yeah.
You're going through school. It sounds like you were just relentlessly persecuted. Do you develop a defence mechanism or shield so that you can function as a child?
Yeah, absolutely. I knew from a very early age that I was different. My mum reminded me of an incident up in the bathroom where she came in while I was in the bath and I was profusely scrubbing myself, and she asked me what I was doing, and I said I was trying to get the brown off, but it wouldn't come off. And so I was about, I'd say, four or five maybe at that. And so from that early age, I knew that I was different. That from there on, I would kind of always have this issue of wanting to be white or wanting to have straight hair or different features and fit in and look like everybody else around me. And funnily enough, I have a 6-year-old son, but he has actually come to me and said things quite similar. So, if you think about it, if I was five at the time and we're talking about, 30 odd years later, my son is still saying things like, I want to be white like my friends and I want to be white like my dad, mum. And why am I this colour, And that's not something, obviously, that he's getting in our home. But, his peers, the media, and just in general, day-to-day life, that's going to hold more weight than anything I can do in our home place.
Because we kind of congratulate ourselves a bit about being diverse.
Yeah.
Well done, Ireland. New Ireland, 2020, everything's changed. God, it's not like the old days. It is.
Yeah. You would love to be able to say that there is such change. But I think at the end of the day, I think as a country, we're afraid to acknowledge that the typical Irish person is no more. And that's not me saying to take away from our culture, because my culture, my Irish culture and my heritage is so important to me. I speak Irish. My son is in a Gaelic school. I play the baron, the tin whistle. I represented Ireland. I have a lot of pride in my country, but I want the people of Ireland to understand that.
And you shouldn't have to defend it.
Yeah.
You shouldn't have to be sitting here saying, I'd play the baron.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
You
yeah.
just shouldn't be no. put in that position. And yeah. I'm not asking you to do that.
Yeah.
But you feel obliged to do it because yeah. people are suggesting that you're something other than a proud yeah. Irish woman.
Exactly. And I just really want for people to take a step back and just, you know, a lot of listeners out there, I'm sure, have kids, and just to imagine what it must be like to be a mother and have your child come in to you and tell you that they don't want to be in the skin that they're in. Like, I can't do anything about that. I can't change that for him. And I'm so sorry to even have to be sorry, you know.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, you, Ryan, are white by the grace of God. You're just sheer luck. And I am brown, you know. None of us chose the colour of our skin. You know, at the end of the day, like, I was born and raised here in Ireland the same as you were.
Yeah.
I ate the same food as you. I went to the same
schools. I get your point. You know? And in fact, when I was watching a documentary about the civil rights movement recently with my girls who are, you know, 21 and 15, we'd be chatting about it. And they're looking at it, the policemen shoving the black men and women or whatever, or yeah. in the coffee shop, dragging them out of the coffee shop.
Yeah.
And they're saying, why? I said, because yeah. they're black. I said,
exactly.
Because the colour of their
skin?
And
that's literally it. Like,
yeah.
That's it.
You know, it's
end of story.
So my point about telling that story, Emer, is I'm hoping, upon hope, that their generation
yeah.
will be the one that says,
oh, totally.
And will call out
absolutely
the creatures.
And I feel like really and truly that, like, that's where it lies. And I have a lot of hope, because when there was a lot of the rallies going on, it was mainly, you know, teenage and young adults that were out there protesting.
Well, let's talk about that, because your life progressed ahead from you went to America for a little while, but you came back to Bray. You now live in Bray.
Yes.
Your PE teacher?
PE teacher in Bray.
And you have how many children?
I have two, yeah.
And how old are they?
So Kai is 6 and Sunny Ray is 4 months
great.
Old.
That's a great. There's a pop star or rock star right now.
Right,
Sunny
right.
Ray.
She's made for the stage.
Is she really? She, with a name like that.
With a name like that, yeah, how could yeah, she yeah, not be?
So you're getting on with your life, and then let's go back a step to May 25th, 2020, when George Floyd, reminding people, 46 years old, African American man, was the knee on the neck by the cop, and he died, and it really started something
yes.
extraordinary in the United States, which is an ocean away. So why are you affected by that?
Yeah, and that's a question that I hear all the time.
Go on, tell me.
So I suppose, when that did happen, it took me quite a while to actually respond to it, because I didn't even have it in me to even know where to start. I still haven't watched that video, and I won't ever watch it.
Yeah, it's disturbing.
I did actually do a video in response to that, and I sat on it for a long time because I was afraid to post it, because it really made me so vulnerable. I was expressing things that I have never publicly expressed. I have a lot of friends and family that really don't know what I would have gone through day to day, and I think hearing a lot of my stories now, they're just absolutely shocked that whilst we were growing up and in school and that I was also carrying that load with me every day.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, with people saying that this isn't an Irish thing, this is an American thing, you know, like, and I actually had a conversation this morning with a friend of mine, and she said, why? So the standard is black people in Ireland aren't being killed. So what's, you know, we can't compare ourselves. But like, imagine that being the standard that we're holding ourselves to. Yeah. Well, at least here in our country, we're not killing black people.
Yeah.
What about the daily harassment? What about, like, me, let's say, as a child, not being able to go out and play with my friends freely? And
what about your 6-year-old son?
What about my 6-year-old
asking
son?
Asking questions about why can't I be white?
Exactly.
I mean, so the
exactly.
relevance is huge.
It's huge.
But this, the death of Floyd, George Floyd, it's used that far too often. You were triggered. And you got all this out, this pent up.
It was extremely cathartic.
And the reaction to it when you posted it?
It was so positive. And I did not know, because I did speak to my husband, and because at the time my daughter was only about 5-6 days old thereabouts. So it was one of those things. He said, Emer, you know, you're in a vulnerable position as is. Do you really want to do this? And I did have to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea was for me, if it's not now, then when? I had never felt a space and time where I really felt like I would be able to really make a change or make a difference and speak my truth.
What did you want people to hear?
I wanted just people, I suppose, to realise that racism is here in Ireland, on our doorsteps, and it's happening around you every day and you're probably not even aware of it. But I feel like the more you educate yourself, you will start to see it pop up in your day-to-day life and just think, wow, how did I miss that all these years?
Okay, let's pause for a moment. Because this is the point in the story where everything kind of changes. This is when the story stops being an interview between me and you about your past and the racism as an old story. We're now in the middle of a pandemic, as it happens, in September of 2020. And what appears on the walls around your area?
So I got a message in the wee hours of the morn, being told that my name was plastered all over a wall in one of the busiest roads in Bray. I asked where it was, and I went down, I drove down, and sure enough, my name was there, and I'm not sure what kind of language I can use on here.
I think you can use any language. The kids are in school. Okay. You're trying to make a point, and I think you should. I think we're all adults here, so say what you have to say.
So basically on the wall it said, Emer O'Neill, my full name, fuck up, slut, all lives matter. The week before that I had done an article, I was in the Bray People, basically talking about why all lives matter is not a positive for this movement. And
we'll come back to
we'll
that.
We'll come back to that,
yeah,
that's
for
no
sure.
problem. But yeah, so that was kind of in retaliation, and I was preparing myself for that because a week or so before that, Councillor Erica Doyle also had made some statements saying that, you know, we as Bray People, we do not accept racism in our community. Sure. And her name was also plastered on a wall.
As a sympathiser to you, obviously.
Yes.
Not obviously, but you would imagine.
Yeah.
Did you see that graffiti, by the way, or did you just hear about it?
Yeah, so I saw that.
Can you tell me what it was like when you set eyes on it?
It was really hard to see my name up there on a road that, like, since I've been a young child, I've worked, that's one of the routes I would take when I'd work out. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd walk it with my family. You know, my son is starting to read now. Like, he would easily be able to recognise my name, and just even the idea that, so I had to bypass that road for a couple of days because it took a couple of days for it to be actually cleared off.
What happened on the day of your son's birthday?
So on my son's 6th birthday, obviously with the pandemic, everything is so weird. I was just trying to make a day as normal as possible for him. So we only had a few little friends over. We were sitting in the front room, and I heard these bangs, crashes, and my brother jumped up and he screamed, "They're egging your house." I was like, "What's happening?" I had my daughter, Sunny Ray, in my hand. I turned to my best friend and I just kind of reached out. I said, like, "Take her, please." And I ran out. My mum ran out. My brother ran out. And we just saw these two lads hopping on a bike and cycling off. So we have cameras, thank God, and played back the video, and there was two lads that came up, and you could it was totally premeditated. You could see they knew exactly where they were coming. They had left their bikes, walked up to the area that they wanted, stood, stared at their target. You can see them staring right at my window, the two of them. They kind of look at each other, and then it's like then the head nod, let's go, and you can just see the aggression in their face. It was actually so hard to watch the video. It hurt me more watching the video, I think, than the actual, you know, incident, because I could nearly feel so much hate from them. And then, of course, I was also struck with, I just hope it's none of my students, you know, because that would kill me, you know, because I love my kids so much, and
I'm sure
put a lot into them.
Sure it wasn't, but
you know, I suppose we just kind of, it was a special, very special day. But if you ask my son about his birthday, he'll tell you my house got egged on my birthday. That's what he remembers of that day.
Yeah, between the graffiti, that incident you've just outlined, has anything, I mean, not to say has anything else happened, but has it calmed down, or is it,
no.
Does it rumble along?
No.
Do you hear things in the slipstream as you walk along the street?
Well, after the first bout of graffiti, I woke up, I think, two mornings later to a text in my Black Lives Matter group to say, look, Emer, really sorry. And I know you don't want to wake up to something like this, but your name is on an estate wall again. And then rang the guards to report it, they said someone had already reported it. And they said, are you aware that there's more? And I said, no, where? And they said on the tennis court, the tennis club's wall, and also on the wall of the shoreline gym.
All along the same lines as the...
All the same language, thing with, same my, language. With my name, calling me a slut, telling me to fuck up, and that all lives matter.
Okay, let's talk about... I mean, I can't even... I don't know, quite know where to begin in terms of how you are in the face of this.
Yeah.
But I will ask you that after I ask you this question, if you don't mind. I'm kind of jumping around. I hope you understand.
Of course, no.
I appreciate it, Emer. Black Lives Matter is now, you know, BLM for short, or at least we all have heard about it and everything like that. And there's this kind of subplot to the story where people say, no, all lives matter. Why are you just saying Black Lives Matter?
Correct.
Now, there's a lot of people who listen to this program who aren't on Twitter and who aren't, you know, involved in the to and fro of this. They're simply getting on with their lives.
Mm.
So could you, in a succinct and short way, and I say that respectfully, tell us why you find that the all lives matter thing, and I emphasise the all lives matter thing, is just not getting it.
Yeah. So when you say Black Lives Matter, you're not saying black, only Black Lives Matter. What you're trying to say is that Black Lives Matter too. So this statement of all lives matter cannot be true, because at the moment, black lives are not equally held up in society as white people's lives are. You know, they're, at the moment, black people are being harassed. They're being discriminated against in the workplace. You know, we're not represented in most leadership roles throughout this country, and or in the media in general. And the way of life for a person of colour is very tough, and it's not acceptable, I think, for in the 21st century for this still to be happening. So when you respond with all life matter, like there's a few things out there, and I'm sure the listeners have seen them, but I think this is a good one, because, and I'm not comparing the two, but so you have somebody that says, you know, cancer or breast cancer awareness, and then in response to that, a person says, yeah, but what about all the rest of the cancers?
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
That's just one example.
The argument, it seems to be, is that it's a dog whistle. There's a sort of a racist twinge to it, is there?
There absolutely is, and that's the thing.
Yeah,
and
masquerading as a sort of, no, we're on everyone's side. Whereas
like, you have to understand, I believe that all lives matter. Of course I do. I believe all lives matter.
Yeah,
but the purpose of this movement is to emphasise the discrimination that's occurring for black people.
Let me ask you then, in conclusion, in some ways, Emer, thanks for your honesty this morning, because I think we need to hear it. And that's what's so important. So appreciate you coming in.
Yeah.
What are we to do in terms of, for example, you, is that graffiti still on the walls?
No, it is not.
It's been taken down
been
or
taken
painted
down.
Over or
yeah,
what have you?
I have to say,
who did
the
that?
People in Bray, the response that I've got in general from all over Ireland to that graffiti was just unbelievable. It was so supportive.
That's really good news.
It is. And this is one of the things that I will say, is that for me, an incident of discrimination or a racial incident only bears so much weight on me depending on how people around me support me.
Yeah.
And I hope that makes sense.
Yeah.
This could have been a huge event in my life that could have really spiraled out of control, to see my name like that and to be targeted like that in my own hometown around the corner from where I live.
Yeah.
But because the people of Ireland were so supportive, like honestly, I got about 1,000 messages from people just saying, this is not us. This is not Ireland. We support you. What you're doing is correct. We need to stamp out racism. We are here to be vocally anti-racist with you. And that has just, honestly, I can't express how much that has meant to me, really and truly.
There is increasingly, I'm beginning to sound like a broken record, but I'll say it again, because I'm so inspired isn't the word, but I'm moved by your story this morning to say it again, that there is a loud, noisy minority in this country, and they're very noisy, and they're very disruptive, and they can be extremely cruel.
Yes.
But they are nothing in terms of numbers to the beautiful, thoughtful majority
Absolutely.
Who are getting on with their lives, who care and are kind, and just aren't roaring and shouting. Unfortunately, that silent majority, if you want to call it that, and it's an expression that has echoes from history that probably aren't great. But for the purpose of this conversation, if for the right reasons, we probably need them to be a little less silent and to stand up
definitely
a little bit.
Like,
to
that's one of the
this
things that I would really try and advocate for is, you know, if you want to be an ally and you want to, you know, show you that you are in support of this movement, is to be vocally anti-racist, to stand up. Don't be a bystander around, you know, racial comments, you know, and you have to have those tough conversations with family and friends, and you might lose one or two along the way. But do you really want that person in your life anyway?
No.
Because, you know, ultimately they're not, probably not a good person, you know.
The texts are overwhelming in their support for you. I'm going to read you some because I think you need to hear them to your face. I came across Ema recently on Instagram. She's an amazing and fabulous inspiration. Reminds me also of who have privilege that we need to be aware of what is happening to others in our society. I have a little girl the same age. I have no idea how she finds the time to be such an amazing advocate. I had no idea this harassment had happened to her, so I'm sorry to hear it. It's clear we need more education around racism in our schools and in society at large. This should not be happening in 2020. An amazing and proud Irish woman, Ema. I'm so sorry to hear you live through this. The Bray community stands with you. We are so proud of you. It's lovely to hear that. Jacinta says, aren't we a cruel human race? I wish more people in Ireland would call out any type of racism. Another from Elizabeth. Absolutely well done to your guest for telling her story about how it is. Single motherhood was taboo in the 1980s. Never mind the colour of one's
correct
skin. Well said. Doubling down on the taboo there. Let's face it. All lives cannot matter until black lives first matter.
Absolutely.
Nice way, nicely put. Colin in Dublin, it's harrowing hearing any human being remembering a childhood where they tried to clean their skin colour off. I often hear people I know brush off racism as if it's not important, or you're being a killjoy by calling it out. I hope all of them hear Emer's testimony and take it to heart. Emer, you're an amazing person for speaking up, and I'm sorry that it happened to you like that. Aoife says, as a Bray resident who happens to be white, I've been lucky enough not to know how much intolerance is around me. Thank you, Ema, though, for bravely sharing your story, and I hope we can open the minds of those who are scared when someone happens not to look exactly like them. I'm proud to have you as a neighbour. Brave for love, says Ema this morning. And another says, what Ema has gone through makes my blood boil. Bray will not stand for this, and we will stand with her. Keep up the wonderful work. You know, that is great.
That's so lovely.
You know, Bray is a great place, as you well know, the Garden County of Ireland, and a great town. It's served, it has a great home for holidays for people down through the years, and it's great people there, and you can see that they're,
we have a beautiful community.
You can see that. Last word goes to a text which says, we are all listening to you here in Emer's school. Emer is a wonderful, strong role model for our young people, and we are so proud of her, sending all our love and support.
Oh, stop.
So that's where we'll leave it there. Emer O'Neill, what a pleasure to meet
Thank you
this
you
morning.
So much.
And
for
your children are lucky to have you as your husband and as your mother is. She's plenty to be proud of, I think it's fair to say. Let's keep talking.
Absolutely.
And thanks for being
Thank
here today.
Thank you so much.
Good to see you.